Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, y'all? What you got to say? Who on the phone? No, let me stop. Sports City, what's going on? It's your boy TP Thomas. We about to kick this thing off. I mean, we got 4 hours. We got 4 hours on the dot left of the month of March. That's right. 31 days of complete pandemonium. I'm not even going to lie. I love every last bit of it. We're getting ready for the month of April where everybody's fighting for positioning. Welcome to the cafe, y'all. Let's get it going, man. 90 minutes with us. Y'all already know the slogan. Ida took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive.
New York, Jersey, Philly, Baltimore, D.C., Virginia, Atlanta, everybody rock!
Number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 90 minutes block loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the show. Sports City, excellent stuff. Seeing excellent numbers from the premier show last night with the baseball buffet spills right into a basketball show here with the Crossover Cafe. We are a day or two away from the Final Four, where there can only be one by Monday. A lot of stuff to jump into. I got a little controversial perspective and want to see how my brothers feel here in the kitchen. I got Chandler here in the building. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, I'm here.
No doubt. Also calling in by way of the state of Virginia, I got Tommy here. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm good.
And last but not least, I have Art Keezy, a.k.a. Mr. King. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this week?
Man, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. You know what it is.
Okay, so let me jump into the controversial topic first, where I actually heard it outside of Sports City. And I'm not going to lie, people, I felt the same way about it, too. I felt the same way about it, too. And I looked at it, and I was like, is this a dish that I bring to the kitchen? But then once I heard people talking about it, I said, well, why not? Why not? And I think I'm the one that's calling it controversial, but I want to see how everybody else feels about the situation in which they have elected Yao Ming to the Hall of Fame, you know, Basketball Hall of Fame. Me, personally, I agree with the person that put the mention out. I'm going to give him credit, and Jalen Rose. Jalen Rose put the perspective out there and stated he doesn't think Yao Ming is a Hall of Famer. I agree. I don't think for the list of big men that have been in the league comparable to Yao Ming, I mean, Yao Ming may have had a game or two here where he might have had a 30-point night. I don't think Yao Ming was somebody you bragged home about. He was a 7'6" guy. He led the league in all-star votes because he came from China. You know, I give him those type of perspectives, but I could think about center upon center upon center, and I don't know how they look at Yao Ming stacking up to the likes of a lot of the centers that we've seen from yesterday. So I wanted to bring that to the kitchen and see how you guys felt about it. Chandler, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on Yao Ming being elected to the Hall of Fame?
First off, you need to be specific about which Hall of Fame. And this is why Jalen Rose is wrong. It's the Naismith Hall of Fame. And a lot of the criteria for that is, what did you contribute to the game of basketball? Yao Ming contributed a lot to the game of basketball. Everybody keeps saying, well, he got all-star votes because he's from China. He wasn't the first Chinese player. There was a player that played for the Milwaukee Bucks. He was Chinese. How many all-star games did he make? None. So every time somebody says, well, he only got all-star votes because he was from China and they got X amount of many Chinese people, there were other Chinese players that played and never got all-star votes. So that's a false statement. To state it in a way that seems that, well, he only got the votes because he was Chinese and only China voted for him, then every Chinese player should have made every all-star team. And they didn't. Yao Ming had a huge impact on the game. He opened it up to a whole other continent. A whole other continent is how he impacted the game of basketball. And I would just say this. Does Arvydas Sabonis belong in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame? Yes, he does. Did he play in the NBA? Yes, he did. Was his career in the NBA truly anything to write home about? No, it wasn't. Because by the time he got to the NBA, his knees were so shot that he was a shell of himself. Yet his contributions to the game of basketball globally and what he did while he was in Europe are why he's there. So it's short-sighted and it's ignorant of Jalen Rose to come at it the way he did. It's short-sighted and ignorant. And he seems real petty to me. He comes off real, real petty to me. Because you try to diminish this man. Why? Because what? You got nothing better to do? Because you didn't really want to do your research and state any facts? You just went at the man, oh, Yao Ming, oh, yeah, most favorite Chinese. I think it's petty and small-sighted of Jalen Rose. And I think if you look at the totality of what Yao Ming did, and what he brought to basketball, not just the NBA, then you see why he was inducted. For me, I don't have a problem with him going in.
Okay, what's your thoughts on the situation with Yao Ming being elected to the Hall of Fame? Do you agree or disagree with him being elected?
Well, I'm about to be a little dumb. Found it for a second. I guess I never really paid attention. So, I mean, I thought it was just one NBA Hall of Fame. I thought Naismith was that one and the same. Am I wrong?
No, they're not the same. They're not the same. The Naismith Hall of Fame, the NBA Hall of Fame are not the same. They're not the same. Because you have women in the Naismith Hall of Fame. You have no women in the NBA Hall of Fame. These are two different Hall of Fames.
Okay. All right. Well, I understand what he did for basketball in terms of representing China. And he might not – in my opinion, it's not about whether he was the first one. I mean, he was the best one. He's the best Chinese basketball player that I've seen. He's better than Yi Jianlin, who played in Milwaukee and played for New Jersey. One thing we noticed, though, because of injuries, you know, really after the first 3 years, it was tough, you know, battling injuries, having such an obligation and a duty. And feeling, you know, responsibilities to be noble in the sense of representing his country during those off seasons, it did a lot of damage to his body in a short period of time. Again, due to the fact that he was dealing with foot injuries, he wasn't a 7'6" guy who was a slight of frame. That's another thing that made him, you know, in a sense, a special specimen of a player. I mean, this guy literally had size, you know, some girth to him. He had, you know, very good touch on his shot. He's a big man who could shoot, you know, free throws pretty well. So, I still don't see his career as a Hall of Fame career in totality, whether it's one or two halls. I don't know. When it comes to what you do on the court, what he did, you know, it's like, it's almost like Grant Hill. Is Grant Hill going to get in the Hall of Fame, or are people going to, withhold Grant Hill getting into the Hall of Fame because injuries pretty much attacked him when he really was about to enter into his prime? Grant had some outstanding early years of his career there in Detroit, obviously, and he. His career was shaping up to be that of a Hall of Fame career, but it was derailed with injury, and I think the same thing happened to Yao Ming. So is he getting in because of his numbers, or is he getting in because of the politics? I hate to say it, but it appears to me, yes.
Worse. I was wrong. There is only one Hall of Fame. I was so
I was waiting to correct you on that, Chandler. There's only one Hall of Fame.
I appreciate it. I mean, because I thought the NBA Naismith Hall of Fame, Memorial Hall of Fame, I thought it was one and the same, and I did a quick Google search.
Exactly.
But I was like, still, like, yo, am I misunderstanding something? It's so cool.
Right.
I'm not going to argue it. But again, the point
right.
simply is, numerically, I don't see how Yao Ming can get into the Hall of Fame. Politically, I completely understand how he's in the Hall of Fame. That I understand. It's just something that I think when we talk about the game of basketball, the contribution to and how it has exploded and expanded globally, he played a significant part. This guy had American Express commercials. And he didn't speak a lot of fluent English during that time, but he did it with his size. His face was recognizable. And with body language and facial expressions, his commercials were hit. So, you know, when you think about those things, is he a guy that you want to remember for his presence in the game of basketball, what he did in the NBA in regards to how brief the time? Yes. And that's how, basically, I guess you say he gets in before Grant Hill, because unfortunately, Grant Hill was born in America. He looks like a lot of the players who are already in the Hall of Fame, and no one's going to, I guess, step up, if you will, and champion his cause, so to speak, at this point in time, for what he did and how, basically, we could see that the arc that he was on, it was cut short. But Grant Hill had all types of endorsements. He was very popular. He had shoe deals, and I mean, he, during a time where the Detroit Pistons had some of the ugliest uniforms known to man in basketball history, he was carrying that franchise and competing, you know, doing the best that he could to battle Michael Jordan and Scottie Pittman and Rodman, guys like that, when they were at the height of their powers, doing their second stretch of three-peat. So, Grant Hill was a great player. Yao Ming was a good player. I don't know if he was great, but he was good. I mean, he was very, very effective. I mean, they utilized Yao. Yao got touches as a big man, and he yielded a lot of results. Again, this is a big man who shot 52% for his career, and 80% from the free throw line. He would go to the free throw line 7 times a game. So anytime you get like 20 and 10 from a guy, pretty much almost every year that he, since he had pretty much come into the league, I think it was only his rookie year. Man, I'm probably looking at his per 36 minutes here. I apologize. But again, the field goal percentage and free throws are accurate, but he was a career 19-9. In terms of points and rebounds. But, again, like I said, he's a 20-10 guy. I just can't call him a Hall of Famer, man. In my opinion, I wouldn't have voted for him to be a Hall of Fame player. At this point, I don't know if this makes him first ballot Hall of Fame or not. But if it does, again, I absolutely would not have made him a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, if you get in at a later date, I think there's some other players that, you know, I will probably look to get into the Hall before, yeah, I mean, but that's just me, and maybe that's why I don't have a vote.
Now, I agree with you, Royce, and I wanted to get everybody's perspective around this. He played 8 seasons in the NBA. He missed the entire 2009-2010 season. He did not play. In his 8 seasons, 4 of which he played close to a full season. He played 2 full seasons at the start of his career. He missed 2 games in his 3rd season. His 2nd-to-last season, he played 77 games. Majority of his career, he was injury-riddled, and I don't know if we blame it on the wheels because of his growth and how tall he is, but he didn't really do more than that 19-10. And to get these guys over the hump and getting them to a postseason bid is what I'm looking at. More or less changing the game. Like, what did he change other than being a big guy in the paint? Like, we've seen a ton of big guys in the paint or being a 7'6" guy. I want to see if he could change the game. I don't think he did change the game. I think that this brings a more or less a better perspective of guys that are overseas can come and visit the Hall of Fame and see y'all and generate dollars still from the league off of his name. I think his name alone creates, you know, revenue or bringing dollars of some amount. But 19-9 for his career, doesn't really have that much of a standpoint in postseason play where he played with guys like T-Mac. And these guys were getting bumped in the first round. They were getting tossed. Like this is what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not trying to talk about the old China, this China, that. I can care less where you're from. I'm saying that China perspective is where he got his votes from. There's 2 billion people in China. Like, let's just say 200 million of them voted. Like, he has a large amount of people that are backing him out there. That's why I threw that out there. I wasn't doing that just based off of, you know, where he's from. Like, I get it at the end of the day. Him having this small of an NBA career and still being touted as a NBA Hall of Famer, with just like Will said, there's guys that are on the outside looking in from the Hall of Fame that I think did more for the game. I definitely think did more for the game than on the outside looking in right now, to be brutally honest. In the short stint of him being in the NBA from 2002, where he started his career, where it ended in 2009, and he missed a full season due to his injuries, I mean, this is almost comparable to a Bill Walton situation where Bill Walton's career came to a close early due to injury. I look at the same situation with Yao, but, you know, Walton's situation is come and gone. Yao's situation, he still, if his career wasn't injury riddled, he'd still be able to play right now. He couldn't give it a go any longer, and he's being touted as a Hall of Famer. And I definitely, and I could actually go the way that Royce would look at this, looking at his stats across the board. I mean, for him to be 7'6", I think he could do more. I think he could do more for what he actually contributed in his NBA career. I'm not fully impressed. I'm not.
You going to Tommy now, right?
Excuse me?
You going to Tommy, right? Because I got something for both you and Royce, but I know you would. I was saying you're going to go to Tommy now, right?
No, well, Tommy fell off, but I do have Mikey D in the building. Mikey D, welcome to the Crossover Cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
Not bad, TP. How we doing in the kitchen, guys?
Doing all right. Your thoughts on the Yao Ming election, do you think that he's a Hall of Famer?
Well, the basketball, it's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. So if you consider Yao Ming, you know, also what he's done in China and how he's transcended the game and opened it up to a different market, I would say, yes, he is a Hall of Famer. His NBA career, is he an NBA Hall of Famer per se? No, his numbers aren't there to back that up. He didn't play long enough, but he did have a successful NBA career. And what he's done for the people of China and people, you know, from that side of the world and what he's looked at, I would say, yes, he belongs in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Okay, Mikey, what do you call a successful NBA career?
Well, I mean, he averaged 19, what you were just saying, he averaged 19-9. I mean, how many guys have done that? I mean, 19-9 for 8 years. I mean, he battled with Shaq, if you ask Shaquille O'Neal, one of the toughest players that he's played against. And Yao Ming was a great player, a go-to guy. He can, you know, he's the definition of what a stretch player is now. I mean, Yao Ming was one of the first. So he's changed the game in that way. I mean, he for a big man, he can shoot the basketball. Great from the free throw line. Most centers aren't great from the free throw line. So, hey, if you look at his numbers and you say, okay, 8 years, 19 and 10, but it's more than that with Yao Ming. He transcended a whole different race of people and bringing more fans to, you know, to the NBA.
Now, Mike, I want to say this, and then I'm going to get the channel on this. That 19 is like a hit or miss situation because in the 05-06, 06-07, and 07-08 was where his high point total came to raise that number. He was averaging 22 in two of those and 25 in one of those. The one that he averaged 25, he played 48 games. And in the two 22-point seasons, he played 55 and 57. The other seasons, he had 17, 13, 10, 19. Like if he played full seasons, like the 82 games where he started coming out, I think this number could actually drop. This number could actually drop.
I disagree with that. I mean, he's a 19, 20-point game scorer anytime he's on the floor. I mean, that's what he's been. And even bigger overseas. I mean, this guy, he had all the hype coming in. I felt like he lived up to the hype. We've seen a bunch of number one picks, you know, who were busts and couldn't get it done. And, you know, Yao Ming, you know, people looked at, you know, people from China or from Europe saying they're soft players, and Yao Ming wasn't a soft player. So I think he lived up to the hype. I mean, you're not going to compare him to the greats in the NBA. I'm not saying that. But what he's done for the sport, like I said, this isn't the NBA Hall of Fame. He wouldn't be in the NBA Hall of Fame. But for the basketball,
there's only one Hall of Fame, Mike. There's only one Hall of Fame.
But college coaches are in that Hall of Fame. They've never stepped into the NBA, so it's a basketball Hall of Fame.
Right, but they also do have a college basketball Hall of Fame. There's a difference, though. They do have a college basketball. They recognize college coaches in Naismith Hall of Fame, but they do also have a college basketball Hall of Fame comparable to the Naismith Hall of Fame as well. I just don't get it. I'm not buying it. Where I really see, a stronghold on him going through the duration of a season, he's only done it four times, and that's me including a 77-game season and an 80-game season. Now, those are the two seasons where he actually missed time, and I don't know if five games could be due to rest or injury, or the other one where he missed two games could be due to rest or injury. But he's only played two full seasons. That was his rookie and sophomore year. Other than that, questionable. Questionable.
You can make an argument either way, Ty. But I see where you're coming from. But, I mean, in my honest opinion.
And here goes another one. You said you can't compare him to the greats. He's in the Hall of freaking fame. He's with the greats. This isn't mediocre. He's not around mediocre. You don't put mediocres in the Hall of Fame. He's been compared to the greats. Yes, he is. This is where the greats go.
Okay, so take the years and the injuries out of it. When he stepped foot on the floor, Ty, would you consider him one at the time when he played? Was he one of the best players in the NBA?
No, he wasn't.
I think he was.
No,
one of the definitely a top five center. Absolutely.
Okay, Chill. I know you said you were trying to throw something out there. Please.
Well, it's a couple of things. You keep focusing on NBA, and this Hall of Fame covers basketball. That's one point. Because there are European coaches who never coached a day in the NBA that are in this Hall of Fame. So should they not be in the Hall of Fame because they didn't impact the NBA? He impacted basketball on a global level. You said yourself, he's recognizable all across this planet. Across the planet, mind you. Across the planet. So don't tell me he didn't impact the game of basketball. Secondly, is Artis Gilmore a Hall of Famer? Anybody?
I don't think they put Artis in yet.
Artis is in the Hall of Fame.
I don't remember.
Here's his numbers. He played 12 seasons. Yao played 8. His numbers: 17 and 10. Yao was 19 and 9. The Artis never played one game in an NBA Finals. Again. Artis is also a guy who, by the time he got to the NBA after playing in the NBA, and he did win an NBA championship, his knees were shot, so he wasn't the player he could have been, and he still averaged 17-10. Yao Ming had to every year go and play for his national team, and it wasn't a choice; it was mandatory. He couldn't say no. That is why his body broke down so much, because he was playing almost double what anybody else was playing at 7'6", and the weight that he carried, because he had to play for his national team. There was no, well, you don't have to play this year. There was no choice in that for him, because remember the country he's coming from and the type of government that he had to live under and the things that he had to do so that he could be allowed out of the country to play basketball. Yao Ming impacted the game of basketball globally. That is why he's in the Hall of Fame. It's not just about the NBA with the Naismith Hall of Fame. It's not just what you did in the NBA. It's not. If you only want to look at the NBA, that's your choice. But that Hall of Fame is about a lot more. Otherwise, there wouldn't be women in there. There wouldn't be European coaches in there. There wouldn't be college coaches in there. And I don't hear anybody complaining when they get in. Where was Jalen Rose when that European coach, who never coached a day in the NBA, got elected to the Naismith Hall of Fame? He didn't have a problem with him. He didn't have a problem with what Arvydas Sabonis getting in. He didn't have a problem with Karl Blazowski and Ann Donovan getting in. This is not just about the NBA. It's not just about the NBA. That is why I said Jalen Thomas is ignorant, because he's choosing to pick one guy, and he wants to know what he did in the NBA, but you don't want to talk about what anybody else didn't do in the NBA that's in that same Hall of Fame.
Okay, is there anything else that you guys like to throw in? I'm going to try and pull up, like, the greatest centers in the all time. I mean, do we start to wrangle amongst the greats? I mean, we could look at the Kareems. We could look at the Wills. We could look at the Bill Russells. I don't know if he could even hold a candle to these guys to be compared or thrown in the same type of Hall of Fame as these guys. Like, this is his, his peers, if you will, if you look at this. Like for him to have an 8-year career, I can't even think of a game where Yao dominated the game, and you look at it like, wait, Yao went into the game and couldn't be stopped, or when did Yao get past the first round? I don't even want to look at Artis and say Artis got to an NBA final. I don't even want to compare it to that, because if we look at it, Will Chamberlain won what? One championship, right? Will won one championship, and I'm not even looking at it as a championship situation.
Will won two.
He was just as
he won two.
Okay, he got two. He even if I throw Will in a situation with Yao on success, getting to an NBA final, he has a leg up there, and I'm not even trying to draw that comparison. He was as successful as far as Tracy McGrady carried that team. Those teams that he was on in Houston was not a Yao Ming-led team. Yao was a role player at that.
Resume. You can't compare him to those guys. Yao has a totally different resume.
Can we really get off the Yao Ming topic? Like, look,
he's not, like, this dude is not that big of a deal. Like, there's no reason to even talk about Yao Ming. One, you're talking really about Yao Ming because Jalen Rose said something. You know what I mean? Like, no one cares. Like, I mean, just because we recognize the guy, it's not hard to not know who the 7'6 Chinese dude is all across the world, if you had any brief moment of spotlight and shine, okay? So, but, you know, no one cares. You know, like, he's impacting Chinese brand basketball. He's impacted, you know, players, get it, all around the world, because now China has the league, and a guy like Stephon Marbury went over there and, you know, created a whole new life for himself. And other NBA players have gone to China because, again, they were kind of funneled there when we had the strike in the NBA. Like, this is where you can go and you can get big money because China has money. So, I mean, again, we get it. We know why he's in. He's in because of his impact on basketball and how he helped expand the game around the world in terms of who is now playing and participating and spending their money on the NBA brand. His numbers are not while he's in. I don't know anybody who really gets in off an 8-year career, period. Bottom line, it doesn't matter what you put up. You get 8 years, it's usually not enough to get into the Hall of Fame. So you have to do something else significant. That's what he did, covered it. Please, can we move on?
Okay, fair enough. I felt like it was interesting for me to throw that out there. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference right now. In the thick of things, in the heart of the discussion, as a lot of these teams are fighting for positioning, 4 through 6 at this time are tied. And this is something that we've been talking about for quite a bit, from the 3rd seed to the 6th seed. It was about a game and a half, 2 games separating them. They are all tied at 45-31 with limited amount of games left in this situation, in which you have the Boston Celtics, you have the Miami Heat, and the Charlotte Hornets, excuse me, I said 45, they're 43-31, all of which are tied. Depending on how this ends up panning out, they all have the remaining 8 games left. I want to see how you guys think this will end up panning out, if these 3 teams remain the same, if they could actually leapfrog and get better than the situation. I mean, Atlanta's on the outside at, a game ahead of all 3 of these teams. But Boston, Miami, and Charlotte have made it that much more interesting in the Eastern Conference. You know what, Mikey D, I'll let you set this one off first.
You know what, Ty? We were talking about it a couple weeks ago or last week, and I think Charlotte has really put themselves in a great place. I mean, they're playing great basketball. And who would have thought they'd ever be where they are right now? And, I mean, we kind of know right now who's going to be there in the Eastern Conference, so it's kind of more or less, how the seeds shape out. But I think Charlotte can end up being a 4 and possibly may even make a run at that 3. But, I mean, regardless, we're going to have some great matchups in the first round of the Eastern Conference.
Interesting. And I'm not even taking anything away from Charlotte, because Charlotte has been playing good ball. Their last 10 games, they are 7-3 out of their last 10. I'd be impressed if they could actually withstand the storm and go to the 4th seed and get home court. If they can actually fight for that 4th seed and get home court, whether Boston or Miami stays at 5, or if somebody moves up and gets to the 3, or if somebody's strong enough to get to the 3rd spot. Atlanta's still in this picture. It's not like Atlanta's out. Atlanta loses, one of these teams wins, somebody's in third place. So this is a very interesting situation. Like I said, it was a game and a half. Now it's a game that separates all 4 of these teams right here at 3 through 6. But 4 through 6, they're tied at 43-31. Nail-biting situation, in which Boston has the edge at 4, Miami at 5, Charlotte at 6. Chandler, your thoughts in the middle of the Eastern Conference. There's a war going on. How do you think this thing ends up panning out?
I think it ends up the way it is right now. The only team I think might make a move is Miami, but the 3 of these teams are, I want to say inconsistent, but they are. They win a few, then they lose a few, then they win a couple, then they lose a couple. This is who they are. I don't see any of these teams getting the 3rd spot. I think it will probably wind up shaking out exactly like it is with Boston, Miami, and Charlotte. Like I said, the only team I think might make a move is Miami. But them and health is the thing with Miami. Charlotte, I don't think Charlotte is – people have been sleeping on Charlotte. I'm going to say we, because I haven't. And they've impressed me more and more, but I don't think they have enough to get to 4. I don't think Charlotte has enough, but I think they're going to be dangerous in the first round. I think whoever plays them in the first round, I can see Charlotte winning their first round series at the 6th seed, but maybe Miami jumps Boston, but I think this is going to be it. And at the bottom of it, I don't see either of those two teams that are outside the playoffs getting in the playoffs. I think these are the 8 seeds.
Okay. So in which the two teams that you're talking about are the Chicago Bulls and the Washington Wizards at 9 and 10. The Bulls are two games away from the eighth seed behind the Pacers, and the Wizards are 3.5. I think the only one I think has a shot is the Bulls. The Bulls are in a fight right now with Houston, notched up at 52. And I do want to save the Bulls because the Bulls are a whole other topic that I have for the day. In which, though, Chandler, I do agree with you. Miami, the way that they've been shooting the ball as of late, even though they lost a critical game last night up against the Lakers, Julius Randle coming up with a shot late to win that game by two. Miami's been a story in itself. I mean, both of these teams, you and Mikey D, actually come up to a legit start. Charlotte's been playing good ball, and Miami, ever since Joe Johnson's gotten there, their field goal percentage has climbed up, and they've been getting play from everybody. If they could stay healthy, this could be another shock situation in the Eastern Conference, especially by the Miami Heat. So, good breakdown from both of you. What's your thoughts on this situation? 4-6, notched at 43-31, all nine games back from Cleveland. But how do you think this thing could pan out if these guys leapfrog each other? If somebody can get to the third seed and catch Atlanta, they're only a game out from Atlanta in the Eastern Conference.
Well, you know, I'll start right here. Right now, I would say that the better defensive team of the three right now are the Boston Celtics, which is probably why they're sitting in the fourth seed as opposed to Miami and Charlotte. And I understand there are tiebreakers and all that stuff that goes into that. But and they also scored the most points of the two teams, the other two teams, Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets. Real quick, man, I'll just throw the schedules out for the Charlotte Hornets. Remaining games for the Hornets, they at home against Philadelphia. They're on the road at Cleveland, at Toronto, at the Knicks, home for Brooklyn, at Washington, at Boston, home for Orlando. I know you can't remember all these guys, but whatever you can grab, try to hold on to that. Then you have the Miami Heat on the road currently. Western Conference swing, it's a three-gamer. They just took that L to the Lakers, 102-100. That's a bad loss. They're at Sacramento, at Portland, home against Detroit, home against Chicago, at Orlando, home against Orlando, at Detroit, at Boston. Whew! Yeah, they're going to have a fight on their hands. And then you have the Boston Celtics. They're not going to get any time off either because they're on a road trip out west. They started out at Phoenix, at the Clippers. There was a win in Phoenix, a loss to the Clippers. Now they have Portland tonight at Golden State on Friday. That's a back-to-back, guys. Then there's at the Lakers, home against the Pelicans, home against the Milwaukee Bucks, at the Hawks, home against Charlotte, home against Miami. The last three games, three playoff teams. And did we mention that they have to play some Western Conference playoff teams in Portland and Golden State the next 2 days? It's going to be tough. So anything really could happen, and it's going to come down to who has it on any given night. You know, it's basketball. Who's making shots? Who's getting stops? Who has the will to win? Because it's not going to be about skill at this point, this late in the season. It's not about the skills. Everybody's hurt, everybody's injured, everybody's playing through something, some kind of nagging injury, there's some kind of issue, but who is going to lay it on the line and for what? For a first-round matchup or for a second-round matchup if you think you can get out the first round? So there's probably a lot of strategizing going on in these meetings between the head coaches and their coaching staff. I don't know, maybe even the organization has some say-so on what they want to do and where they may want to be positioned. But, you know, are the players playing to get wins? Does it even matter at that level? I don't know. Maybe I'm throwing too much on it. But Boston Celtics, Charlotte Hornets, Miami Heat is how I see it closing out. Just because, you know, I still think Boston's a better team. And one of the things that's hurting them right now is Jay Crowder has not been available. It's a possibility he plays tonight. I haven't seen anything to say that he's definitely going to be a go, but he has been a major piece for them this year and basically a breakout season, given the fact that he's starting and producing like a legitimate NBA starter. And he's been on the show for a while, which might explain the fact that they are 5-5 over their last 10 games. But I still think at the end of the day, the Boston Celtics are a really good team. Obviously, they're well coached. And Miami Heat, they're not the same without Chris Bosh. And if they can't get Chris Bosh back, and if he cannot play and contribute, picking up Joe Johnson basically was all for naught in terms of a playoff run this season. So that's kind of how I see it. And the Hornets, I mean, they're just doing what the Hornets do. This year they're in, next year they might be out again because that's what they've been doing in Charlotte. Michael just, you know, he plays the slots just to make the city happy. As long as the city's comfortable and they're able to get a decent draft pick and get a, you know, a top rookie here and there, a lottery pick, you know, it's all good in Charlotte. It's not hard to please the fan base there.
So out of the three, you think Miami actually is the sixth seed at the end of the day?
Yes. And that's provided that the Detroit Pistons don't continue to roll along and decide that they want to climb a little higher.
In which the Pistons are 3.5 back out of the out of this situation because they're all notch. I can't even say out of the sixth seed because if they could go on a string and winning games, this turns this whole situation upside down in the heart of the Eastern Conference. I do like what's going on. I hate to be talking junk about time. The Eastern Conference start playing some strong ball because, in seasons past, you would look through 6-8, and these teams would be under 500. It'll be top heavy, and it looks like that, you know, everybody else would be getting walked through. And now it's a situation where we're getting good play out of this conference. Okay. I know this is more or less that must-see TV situation. I know this is a situation that I really wouldn't touch, but I know that it's been bothering me watching the Lakers play ball. And there's a lot of different situations that I look at with this L.A. Lakers team. One, when I look at this team and how severe they're losing, how Byron Scott has to hang on to this job. Two, it's kind of like, you know, Kobe plays for the early duration of the game and then it's the youngsters that play, and this is what you're going to get in the next couple of seasons with the youth or the guys of tomorrow with this L.A. Lakers team, in which they've been going through a storm of stuff with this media, whether they're out on the streets in the middle of California or in their own homes resonating with D'Angelo Russell and the Nick Young situation. Now, I don't even want to get all into the what happened with D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young. Do they trust him in that locker room? And do they move him as soon as possible? And the third part is, what team does take on a guy with his potential? I don't want to say his talent just as of yet because he's still raw. I still feel like he's raw. I feel like he has more to prove in his NBA career. But looking at the situation, I think this is actually more or less a situation that he's going against himself in this scenario. And I think this is actually tough for a youngster with nobody to really go to. I mean, how much is he going to get shouldered by Kobe in a situation where Kobe's concentrating on the farewell tour? And Byron Scott, to me, I'd be impressed if he could hang on to this job after this season. I'm going to go on a limb and say I think Byron Scott is gone after this season. They're going to have to get another mind in there where they're already saying it could be Luke Walton that could be the guy to run the show there. He's a former Laker. You watch him get a championship there, too. It'd be interesting to see if he can get that job. But I want to look at the D'Angelo Russell ordeal. I don't want to, you know, talk about what he did, so on and so forth. Him being trusted in his, not only in his own locker room, but if they do end up getting him out of California, and I know teams that could use a point guard with his potential, do they want him is the question. I'll throw this one around the kitchen. Worth, I'll let you start this one up. Your thoughts on D'Angelo Russell and life after the situation.
Well, D'Angelo Russell is a 20-year-old kid, and he's growing up in a time where there is no sense of privacy. You know, he's growing up in an era where everyone feels entitled to record, videotape, Periscope, Facebook it, Instagram it, tweet it, however they can put business out They feel like they're, you know, undercover, you know, cub reporters, if you will. And it was just an error in judgment and a bad decision that has us talking about whether or not the Lakers trust this young man on the basketball court. Well, that was not on the basketball court issue. It wasn't. It was an off the court issue. So, why are we saying it like we're saying it? Why are we talking about it this way? But I get it. I understand. This is what the NBA does. It's a fraternity, if you will, amongst the players, and they expect you to respect the guy code. And D'Angelo Russell at this point, he's got to deal with this, get over it, get through it. How do you get trust on the basketball court? Come through. That's all. Come through. Share the ball. There were some issues with this team before this whole video situation where players were not trusting one another. And you could see it in that star unit. Every young, because what you have right now is so many young guys with Julius Randle in his second season, essentially really his first of active games because of a broken leg last year. You have he would have pretty much been obviously the elder to those guys and knowing what's going on and being a whole season ahead of them in terms of productivity and the pecking order, but he's not. So you have Randle, Russell, Clarkson, all vying for whose team is it. Look, Kobe said he's done. He's out of there. And now they know Kobe's going, yo, they want to be the man. They don't know if they're going to get a franchise player, a superstar. Like, who's going to come play with us young boys? Probably nobody. So I want to be the man. And some guys are behaving like they're the man off the court, and they're not the man on the court. And that's really what you have. It's youth, it's immaturity, and they're trying to figure it out. No, the players don't trust D'Angelo Russell. Does he trust himself? Does he trust his teammates? Somebody has to decide to step up and be the point guard. I mean, I'm seeing PG next to Clarkson's name, and I'm seeing PG next to D'Angelo Russell's name, but all I see is shooting guard activity. Guys who are more interested in getting their shots off and up. I don't see anybody going out, making it their business to get their teammates off, to make sure that their teammates are in great scoring positions and getting easy buckets, trying to win, trying to get better, trying to bring out greatness in someone else. I don't see that from either of them. So, look, if the Lakers give up on both guys in the backcourt for a proven young veteran with experience, to pave the way for anybody who would make themselves available of note, whether it be Russell Westbrook, John Wall, even if it's a broken down Derrick Rose, I don't care. It would make perfect sense to me because those guys are obviously more proven than Clarkson and Russell, and you know exactly what you're getting from them, whether it be positive or negative. So, right now you try to get something more for Russ if you're going to move him, but I don't think they're going to. There are so many more issues and so many other layers in Los Angeles in this Lakers team, man. I'm not saying he's the problem, but he hasn't been part of any type of solution this season.
And also, before I move it to Mike, your thoughts on Byron Scott. I'm about to say Byron Russell. Byron Scott and how he's been able to get away with this. Once again, I mean, let's be honest. I'm going to actually call it how I see it. His success situation was when he was in New Jersey and also a short stint while he was in New Orleans. But when he was in Cleveland, he wasn't successful as a coach. And now with him in L.A., he's actually watched this season, plummet as bad as possible. And they're letting him finish this. Do you see him there next season? Because I think, they'll let him go to the end of the season for the remainder of this Kobe Bryant tour. Do you see him there at the start of the 2016-2017 season?
No, I don't, Thomas. I don't see him remaining as the head coach. And some coaches, unfortunately, are only as good as the talent on their roster. It's just the reality of coaching. Some guys really have it, and they really know how to motivate and coach whoever they have. They're not guys that it's all about the talent, and that's a special head coach. The reality is, in my opinion, Byron Scott is not a special head coach. He needs great point per play, you know, talented players. When Byron took that job in Cleveland, he was expecting to have LeBron James, and LeBron said, I'm out. So, you know, Byron Scott would have looked great with LeBron James as his centerpiece player. Didn't happen. At this point, you know, Byron Scott has shown just, you know, exactly how good of a coach he is not at this point. So I would definitely move on. If I'm management of L.A., thank you for your services. We have to get better across the board.
They wasted no time with Coach Brown. They gave him four games and said, you know what, that's it. Go home. Go home. But they let Byron Scott go through two seasons of nowhere near 25 wins on the season. Two back-to-back seasons. Okay, Mike, your thoughts on this situation around D'Angelo Russell. I was going to say Byron Russell again. Why is he on my mind? I don't even know. Well, with D'Angelo Russell and his, you know, off-the-court antics, does he regain the trust of this organization, and do the Lakers get rid of this and nip it in the butt, or do they hang on to the young talent and see what he can provide for the team in the future?
You know what, Ty? Who knows if Nick Young was doing this on purpose? I mean, I wouldn't put it past him either. I mean, you never know what's going on, but it didn't seem like it really bothered him that much with what happened. So I know Russell taped it and everything, and Russell's taking all the blame for this. But, you know, in reality, can he gain the trust of the locker room? I think he's going to get moved, and I think this is what's going to happen. You might call me crazy. I think Byron Scott's going to end up getting his wish. I think LeBron James is going to opt out. He's going to end up with the Lakers. And the Lakers are going to trade Russell to the Knicks for Carmelo Anthony. And the Lakers end up with Carmelo and LeBron and be happy.
Stop.
Okay? Chris Paul, is their other buddy Chris Paul is already in that building. It's the smartest move the Knicks could ever make. They'll match up Russell with Porzingis moving forward. It'll be a way for them to get rid of Anthony. Anthony and James will both be happy. James has a $23 million mansion out in L.A. And Byron Scott has been a veterans coach. I think he sticks around. I think they put some pieces in there. I don't think the Lakers want to rebuild. I think if they can go get themselves a couple of stars and trade Russell or trade Randall, I think they'll do it. And call me crazy, but I think it's going to be LeBron and Carmelo with the Lakers next year.
Crazy. It's potential of it. The potential of it happening. The percentage I say is low. The Lakers do have that money. They don't really have any stars there, and they are basically thirsty for somebody to come save this Lakers team.
Thomas.
Yeah.
Thomas, we have a listener that says the Lakers. They're a Laker fan. We don't want Sam LeBron. Melo's washed up. Keep Randall. That's from a Laker fan.
Okay.
Lakers like stars, and trust me, they're not going to be bad for the next 3 years, and Russell isn't the answer, so I don't know.
Okay, and Mike, before I throw it to Chandler, your thoughts on the Byron Scott situation. So you're thinking he's going to remain there. He's going to be the coach next year.
I do. If they get – well, it depends. If they get some veterans and they get stars in like Carmelo Anthony and LeBron James, yes, I think he'll stick around. If they're staying with the youth movement and trying to build, I think they'll get rid of Scott. Scott's known to be a veterans-type coach. He's not a teacher. He's not a guy that brings the young players along. And if you're going that route, you get rid of him. But if you're going to bring in some veterans and you're going to go for it, they're going to keep him.
Okay, so Chandler, he's already broke the Knicks apart. Chandler, Carmelo could potentially be in L.A. next season. With GM Mikey D in the building, your thoughts on everything that's gone down with D'Angelo Russell up until this point? Does he stay? Does he go? Does he build trust not only within this locker room for the remaining, you know, 10 or less games in the season? And if he does get moved, does any locker room, you know, build that bond of a brotherhood with him while, like Royce just hit on, he's 20 years old, so he's going to grow up. But as of this time right now, it, you know, with social media and technology today, it could have hurt his career. And also outside of that, I mean, your thoughts on Byron Scott as well?
Well, no, because apparently everybody in that Lakers locker room don't understand the word monogamous or keep it in your pants. So, no, the trust is gone. Because the fact that the entire locker room got a problem with it, and not a problem with the fact that this cat is bragging to a 19, this 30-year-old man is bragging to a 19-year-old about his conquests. So, no, he's done in that locker room. And I think that's more of a problem with that locker room than anything else, but that's a whole different subject. I said on draft night when they drafted him that they basically were stunting that kid's growth, and they were putting his career back 2 years. The best thing that could happen to him is for him to get the hell out of L.A. The kid has a lot of talent. There's nobody there to mentor him. Nobody. So this is what you get. When you have a team full of children and veterans who act like children. Nick Young is one of the leaders on that team. That tells you all you need to know about how dysfunctional that locker room is.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't surprise me that all this nonsense is going on. They never should have drafted him. It was a bad move. It was a bad move. It was a bad move. Now, with Royce talking about them moving him, let's understand that Royce has an ulterior motive there as a Sixers fan. I get that.
No,
move.
I didn't talk about them moving.
I know you did.
I don't need that fool. You know I want him now. He damn as good as I see the holes now. I don't want you.
I think the biggest reason for the holes in his game and for the lack of growth is, like I told you, his coach and the fact that who's in that locker room to teach him anything. Who in that locker room was equipped to teach this young man how to be a professional, number one? Who in that locker room? Nobody.
I mean, Kobe's there.
No,
Kobe,
don't talk to me about Kobe.
No,
don't talk to me about
Kobe,
no Kobe with all the nonsense
thing,
that Kobe's doing.
The same thing.
Don't talk to me about Kobe, all right? He still can't keep it in his pants. So how is he going to teach this kid about being a professional? Plus, he's more worried about the gifts and the adulation he's getting as he's going around the league. He gets him giving other people coming up to him and bowing and scraping and saying, Kobe, God, get a picture for Instagram. God, get your sneakers. So, no, Kobe's not there. Kobe ain't teaching nobody how to be a professional. All right? Byron Scott ain't going to teach this kid how to be a professional because Byron Scott said, I'm not interested in teaching. So who is there for him? Nobody. So I understand why he's out of control. I think if you get him in an organization where they have actual structure, you know, maybe they bring in a ancient Andre Miller or Steve Blake to teach him not only how to be a point guard, but how to be a professional. The biggest thing he needs is to learn how to be a professional basketball player. And that has nothing to do with how many shots he makes a night. And he doesn't have that. And that's really what he needs right now. Because the rest will come. For all the holes in his game, this kid has a lot of talent. And I think he's teachable, honestly. I just don't think there's anybody there for him to teach. I don't know if Byron Scott stays because it depends on who's running the show. Does Jeannie exercise her claws and take over the team? Then Byron Scott's gone. If Jeannie doesn't exercise her claws, Byron Scott's staying. Because Jim Buss is a moron. You got to remember who's running this franchise. It's Jim, not Jeannie. Jim is making the basketball decisions. He's the one that put this team together. So if he's still in charge, Byron Scott's staying. And the Lakers are going to suck. Unless they make some moves like they traded D'Angelo Russell, which I think they should trade him because it would help his career. That's the only reason I think they should trade him. Because I think his career would be helped. This kid is on the verge of not being an NBA player in a couple of years. He's on the verge of not being in the NBA in a couple of years. If he stays with this franchise and they continue the dysfunction that they have, not only in the locker room, but in management. That's why Roy said he don't want him now. Because you
Before you keep going, I also want to throw him in there since you say management. Where does Mitch Kupchak stand at in all of this? Mitch Kupchak is like the lost name in all of this.
Because Jim Buss is – listen, man, we all have bosses in our jobs, right? and sometimes your boss decides that I'm gonna do this. Now you're the one who's in charge of that department, but your boss is making all the decisions. So you and your job is to do what? Take all the blame, have everybody call you an idiot. But in reality, your hands are tied because if your boss tells you do this, what are you gonna do? Say no? You got a mortgage to pay, man. Let's be honest. On the four of us on this panel, how many times have we did something that we knew was stupid? But hey, I got rent to pay, man. Royce, got kids to put through school. Ty, you got rent to pay. Mikey, you got kids, right? Okay, that's what you want. That's what we all do. So I can't blame Ms. Kupchak in this because Ms. Kupchak is not making the decisions, man. This is all Jim Buss, baby. This is all Jimmy.
Hey, Chandler, what do you think of my thoughts of Russell for Carmelo?
I don't think Phil would do that because Phil is stuck on the triangle, and he wants Kurt Rambis as a coach, and there's no way in hell that D'Angelo Russell could coexist with Kurt Rambis.
You don't think that he's going back? I think Jackson's going back to L.A. So if he can bring Carmelo to L.A. and LeBron, I can see that being a marriage in heaven. I mean, it's written all over the wall, I'm telling you.
Would you give up $30 million at a job where you could just go on vacation and not be held accountable?
No, I – well, his wife owns the Lakers.
That's okay. It's still $30 million, man. $30 million is not an insignificant sum of money. Bill's going to stay unless he gets fired, baby. That's $30 million. I don't care how you cut it, man. That's $30
million. $30 million to stink as bad as we stunk for how many years. It doesn't change.
What do you think about that scenario? If these moves were to go down, what do you think about the scenario for the Knicks?
Man,
super team.
Look, if this really was some kind of elaborate scheme or plan to pluck Melo from the Knicks and getting to L.A. and somehow, you know, they are sure that LeBron wants to escape Cleveland for a second time and end up with the Lakers, would Phil Jackson come back to the sidelines and coach and labor with those guys? Probably, because it's LeBron and Melo, not quite Mike and Scotty or Shaq and Kobe, but look, we saw LeBron almost single-handedly carry the Cavaliers to a championship over a historic Golden State Warriors team. How much more does he have left in him? I don't know. I don't think it happens. I applaud, you know, Mikey B's creativity. And I'm known to be creative myself with some trade scenarios and proposals and ideas and all that. But I really can't even see this one. I can't see how this would really even come to fruition. Unfortunately, I can't see it.
If it could happen anywhere, it's going to happen in L.A. And they've said that Carmelo and LeBron and Chris Paul want to play together. But hey, Chris Paul's already out in L.A. with the Clippers. And if it's going to happen anywhere, it's not going to happen in Cleveland. You know it's not going to happen in New York because that's our luck. But if it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen in L.A.
I don't think it's
if the
happen.
NBA allowed that to happen, then that commissioner needs to be fired the day after.
I mean, they wouldn't even let Chris Paul get to the Lakers. Who was on the Lakers when Chris Paul was supposed to go there and didn't? And that deal was rescinded.
Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant.
Dwight wasn't there.
No, it wasn't Dwight.
No.
It was Powell and Bynum.
They were trading Powell for him.
No, this was before that. Like, that just happened like 2-3 seasons ago. You know how long Chris Paul's been a Clipper? It's been like
four or five seasons.
Yeah, it's been a while. So you
no, they were
going to
move Pau Gasol. Hey, Pau Gasol's been off the Lakers for how many years now?
It's only been
he's
two.
Been in Chicago.
He's only been in Chicago.
All right, and then he played and he stayed with the Lakers, but that trade was Chris Paul for Pau Gasol and other players. Pau Gasol was going to Houston. It was a three-way deal.
Okay, but well, my point is that Dwight Howard was not in L.A. Dwight was in Orlando somewhere. Okay, so all I'm saying is it wasn't a major blockbuster in terms of what the Lakers had in their cupboard in terms of stockpile talent. It was going to, for the most part, be Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant. Like, that's really who you knew you had. Everybody else, right. I mean, like, those guys were good players, but they're not they weren't franchise players. You know, like Kobe and CP3. And the Leafs said no to that. Melo, LeBron, yeah. Nah, it's not going to happen. In L.A., you know, it's because it's L.A. You know, you try to do something like you saw what they did with Miami. Oh, it's Miami, okay, let's see. Let's see if y'all can pull that off in Miami. Okay, pull it off, you know, 2 out of 4 or whatever. But, nah, Lakers, hell no. They know the formula for winning chips. You don't do that with franchises that really know the formula for winning. Lakers, Celtics, everybody knew what was going to happen when Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen found their way to Boston. That would have never happened if it wasn't for Kevin McHale and Danny Ainge and the wink-wink buddy-buddy deal.
Right.
No one expected it to happen that fast that first year because at the time, each guy was practically looking like he was spent, like he really didn't have anything left. Like they were struggling to get through, and it was like these guys are starting to look like they're really at the tail end of their careers. And for the most part, they really were. They were just motivated, so extremely motivated by the opportunity. And then you had a young, hungry point guard that did not need any shots. And every coach has said it. Rajon Rondo is one of the smartest point guards they've ever had. Persons they've ever talked to. He's a smart kid. And all he did was feed them guys. He got every guy the ball where he needed it. He made their lives easy. And Perkins, all he did was what he was supposed to do. Set screens, set picks, commit fouls. Rondo's going to find you for an easy 10 points. Man, Perkins can't get 10 points a game since he left Boston, since Rondo departed. You understand what I'm saying? But Rondo made this dude relevant enough that he could get you 10-8 or 10-10 and some blocks and do dirty work.
So that's the thing now, Royce, is that the Lakers don't have – they had that when the father was there. They don't have it anymore because of the son running it. Now, again, I say if Genie takes over the franchise, then we talk. This is a whole different conversation because now you do have someone who is a basket who knows basketball, who is proficient, who is a basketball expert. Jenny Buss is one of the smartest people in basketball. Let's be honest here. He's one of the smartest people in basketball. He could take any franchise and make it a winner. I truly believe that. I truly do. But her devotion to her family and everything else, because she could leave there right now and say, "Listen, I want to go run another team." I think there were 20 teams in this league that would bid for her services and say, please come run our organization. That's how smart she is. That's how good she is at what she does in the game of basketball. But, again, because, you know, family thing and all of that, she's not leaving the Lakers. If Jeannie takes over the Lakers, then what Mike is talking about, I can see them pulling off something similar to that. But the league can't let that happen because basically what you've done is you've let Phil Jackson go to New York and steal $30 million. Okay, and then steal their best player for what you're calling a cornerstone franchise, which, let's be honest, when they say the cornerstone franchise, Madison Square Garden is the cornerstone of the NBA, not the Knicks.
But, Chandler, you're a Knicks fan. Do you think that would be a smart move for the Knicks, though, if they put Porzingis and Russell together and started building that way?
Only if Phil Jackson goes. Only if he goes. Only if he goes.
And you bring in Thibodeau.
Exactly. If he goes and you bring in a Tom Thibodeau and you bring in a veteran point guard, Andre Miller. Bring in a veteran point guard to teach them. I think what Thibodeau was doing with him going around the league and learning from some of these other coaches, I think he is looked at himself and said, I have some flaws that I need to correct. That's a huge thing, man. That's a huge thing for a man to swallow his ego and say, I need to get better. Most coaches won't do that. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Go ahead.
Now, I was about to say, until I hear him say he's ready to embrace the young talent, you know what I'm saying? He's just one of those guys that his track record says, damn it, it's like Larry Brown. You know what I'm saying? It was like, you know, the guys that's like, yeah, when a rookie comes on the team, hey, you're a rookie until I say you're no longer a rookie. Other than that, you down, shut up, learn, get better. You know what I'm saying? Until you get some years under your belt. And that's just, unfortunately, if you go and get another young player and you turn the Knicks basically into a young team and that lacks veteran presence, that knows how to win, that, like you said, knows how to be professional, now it's not so attractive of a gig for a guy like Tibbs. Now, Tibbs can be attracted to that team right now based on what it is because Porzingis, Jerry and Grant, those two rookies have been there. They were with the club before he gets to the club. Melo's still there. And you got the other young guys who have – some of them must have been NBA journeymen, but they've been decent role players. They can make some contributions. And then he's going to obviously talk to Phil about, hey, upgrade my roster talent. You got to upgrade it. You got to get me this piece or that piece. And, you know, he's going to want to go shopping because he's going to want to start winning right away. He's not going to want to start developing, and that's the difference. Some organizations and coaching staff do an outstanding job developing young talent. And then there are other organizations, all they want to do is win. They want veterans like Cleveland. They're not trying to develop young talent. You know, then they did that. LeBron left. They had no choice. We got to figure out, you know, who's the hell going to be best, you know, for young talent to figure it out. And Kyrie and Deion Waiters and all those guys hadn't figured out crap. Yeah. When LeBron got back, they hadn't figured out anything. They were just playing ball and doing what they do and arguing over whose team it was and who was better. But when LeBron came in,
This Porzingis kid is different,
listen,
though.
I'm a Porzingis fan, and I don't have anything against Porzingis. But Porzingis doesn't know anything. He doesn't know anything. That's what we're saying. Yeah. He's young.
He's only going to get better, though.
Every young person has to be taught, right? When you were young, you had to be taught. When I was young, I had to be taught. My kids, they need to be taught. Their kids are going to need to be taught. That's just the way of life. When you're young, you have to be taught. Who's teaching?
Yeah.
Who's developing?
And that second year development is the thing because now they have tape on you. How do you respond to the new defenses? How do you respond to guys playing you differently? How you respond to the fact that you're expected to do things now and you're not actually, you know, you're struggling, all of those things. You need some veteran guys on that team to help you do that, to walk you through that. And Royce, you're right, you know, and I'm saying Mark Jackson like that, but, yeah, you need a coach that is able to get these guys to understand how hard the second year is. Because the first year is kind of easy. You're just flying by the seat of your pants. You know what I'm saying? You're going out there playing. Now you got to have a plan. What did you do in the offseason? What did you work on? What didn't you work on? What are your weaknesses? How are they attacking your weaknesses? You need a coach, and I keep using the names Andre Miller and Steve Blake because God knows they're ancient, but every team they're on, if there's a young point guard there, that point guard turns out to be okay. I'm not saying they make them stars, but those guys know how to play ball. You understand what I'm saying? They know how to play ball. So if you bring Russell to my team, you got to bring me an RJ Miller or Steve Blake right along with him. You got to give me that guy. Go ahead.
How about you scrap Tibbs and you go for Mark Jackson?
I would love Mark. I would love Patrick Ewing as a coach. I would love Mark as a coach. I would love Monty Williams as a coach. You know what I'm saying? Give me a guy that wants to teach these young guys. You know?
And I like cause Tibbs. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Royce.
Yeah, I'm not against Tibbs being there. I'm just saying if you're going to make the roster younger, you want to go in a different direction. If you're going to keep some youth and some veteran mix, then yes, if you're ready to get back to winning, you want to get Tibbs. But I also like the idea of a guy like Mark Jackson, because what Mark Jackson brings to the table is positive reinforcement. Like, the dude is going to preach to you. I'm talking about he's going to inspire you. He's going to motivate you. He's going to self-help you. He's going to help you find all kind of confidence and belief in yourself, your skill set, your abilities, how great you can be, and he's going to help you understand how you can go about it. I mean, you got to remember, this guy has been an NBA point guard. He's been a point guard his whole life. He's played for great coaches. He has a wealth of knowledge. He has plenty to offer, and he obviously is a teacher. You can't pastor and preach and not be a teacher. He has what it takes. That's who he is. He can develop those young guys. He would tap into Jerry and Grant and speed up his learning curve, okay, because Jerry and Grant has disappointed this year as a rookie, in my opinion. I expected more, and he hasn't really delivered anything because all the person he really had to get by was Jose Calderon. Like, no, don't get it twisted. Jose Calderon is not looking for shots. He's not. He's looking to set people up. He's not a great defender. You know what I mean? He's not like a tough-as-nails kind of guy, but he can't get past Calderon. That says a lot about how Jerry and Grant is approaching the game, what he knows, basically, what, like I said, what he just doesn't know because he's young. But Mark Jackson comes in. He's going to, like you said, take the talent of a Porzingis, and he's going to tell Porzingis, you're better than Karl Anthony Towns. He's going to tell Porzingis, you're better than Anthony Davis. You're taller than both those guys. Your three-point shot is more fluid and natural than both those guys. You're a better shot blocker than both those guys, okay? You're athletic. Like, your gait, the way he flows up and down the court, sometimes when you look at Porzingis, you don't even realize that this kid is 7'3" because of the way he's moving up and down the court so gracefully,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So, you know, he's got great talent. I'm a big-time Porzingis fan. You guys have, you know, some really good, well, the Knicks have some really good young talent there, but you got to, things got to line up. It's got to match up. You got to get the right people in there, man. If you don't get it right, then things are subject to go wrong because there are a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, and that's the issue is you got a coach in Rambis who, I don't know what the hell he thinks he's doing, and I've never been an Aaron Aflalo guy. But there's no way in hell you're going to tell me that Sasha Vujicic deserves a start over Aaron Aflalo. You can't tell me that. And the fact that you don't have enough respect for a 10-year veteran to tell him this speaks to what Rambis is and what he isn't. He's one of those, I'm a priest from upon high, and then act like you're just supposed to get it. I don't want Kurt Rambis in my organization. I don't want Jim Clemens in my organization. I don't want Phil Jackson in my organization. But until the management of the New York Knicks decides to bring in and embrace a culture of building a foundation to win, this is the cycle that we will continue to go through because this fan base is so short-sighted at times that they don't understand that young players are supposed to struggle. It's called growth and learning. That's what happens with young players. They struggle. They don't always hit right away. They're not bust. They just have to learn and be taught. But do we have the people in places to teach them? We really don't. And that's the issue with the Knicks. So until I see a change in management's philosophy, I can't speak to any coach coming in here because they didn't want those coaches to begin with. They went with Derek Fisher. They had a chance for Mark Jackson or Monty Williams or Patrick Ewing or not Thibodeau. But they had a chance to bring in a guy to teach this young talent, and they went with Derek Fisher.
They made a mistake by bringing in Phil Jackson. When you bring in a Phil Jackson, when you're on the cusp of winning a championship, not starting from scratch, and they gave Phil Jackson all this money, and it wasn't the right time to bring him in, and now they're paying for it. And I can't wait to see him get out the door. I think Jackson's the problem. Kurt Rambis is a Jackson guy. This whole idea of the triangle offense and what the Knicks need to be is not working. And if they don't bring in a big-time talent or do something drastic this offseason, get rid of Phil. They don't have a draft pick, so there's going to be nothing to look forward to next year. If he doesn't bring in a high-profile player, which that's what he's known for doing, getting great players to come play for him or for his teams, if he can't get that done in this offseason, there's no reason for Phil Jackson to be around.
But that's a fallacy.
We give Jackson credit.
What great players are going to play for Phil Jackson? What
no,
great players are going to Shaquille O'Neal. Because management,
no.
He went there for Jim, for Dr. Buss. Okay? Dr. Buss brought Shaquille O'Neal in, not Phil Jackson.
Listen, Shaq was there before Phil.
Before Phil, yeah.
He was with
Bill Harris before Phil got the Phil was still with the Bulls then.
Right.
So we don't have a reason that why Phil Jackson. I mean, who is Phil?
Listen,
like, what has
no,
Phil
no,
Jackson
well,
done?
Down,
I don't know why
down,
this guy
slow
gets
down,
money.
Slow down, because you're thinking that Phil has had some kind of cachet for getting players, and he hasn't. Players
nope.
were already in play. Phil shows up, takes the players there to another level. The only like significant name acquisition when Phil was already coaching on the roster, this credit still goes to Paxson and management there in Chicago and Reinsdorf and all of that, bringing in Dennis Rodman.
Rodman, yeah, that's the only
one. You know what I'm saying? Like those guys, they would go out.
Karl Malone, Gary Payton, he brought in too with LA.
He didn't do anything with them. Miss Kupchak.
Yeah.
That's Miss Kupchak, and they didn't win the chip. That team got smacked by Detroit.
Yep, exactly.
Come
you
on,
see,
man.
that narrative has been pushed by ESPN for years, and people have bought into it. Okay, Phil Jackson had nothing to do with Michael Jordan being drafted to the Bulls. That was Doug Collins was the coach when Michael Jordan got there. Okay, and those moves to get those other players, that was the draft they traded Scottie Pippen. That was Reinsdorf and those guys. Okay, that had nothing to do with Phil Jackson. No star in his prime has ever said, I'm going to play for Phil, because Phil already had two Hall of Famers on his team. He already had two in Chicago. Now, okay, we can say Dennis Rodman. That made three, no doubt, Hall of Famers. But other than
that. Did we throw Lamar Odom in there?
No, because Lamar Odom, honestly, Phil brought a lot out of him, but Lamar Odom
he was getting bounced around. He was a journeyman.
Right, he was a journeyman. Exactly. He's a journeyman guy like Robert Horry that still utilized and got the best out of him. But, again, because he had two Hall of Fame players on the roster, it's easy to get something out of that third guy, even if he's a journeyman, because he ain't got to do much to look good. Okay? Just hit a couple shots. That's all he got to do. Hit a couple shots, make some passes. And at crunch time, make sure I got the ball. That's all they had to do. And they looked real good doing it. And then when Lamar was other places, they expected when Lamar Odom from Chicago, he's like, well, where's the Hall of Fame player to tell me what to do? Oh, no, Lamar, you the star. Oh, no, I can't be the star. That's not what I do.
Too much pressure.
I got to go get high now. Y'all screw me up. You know what I'm saying? Listen, man, look, it is what it is, man. Phil Jackson, this lie about Phil Jackson, and that is why, Ty, I have been railing against this man from the time you've known me. I've never said a positive word about Phil Jackson, and Ty could never understand why. This is why. He has lied and manipulated and got himself into a situation where he's stealing $60 million, which, listen, I can't blame you. You can get a job, somebody pay you $60 million to do nothing, God bless, go get that money, okay? But as a fan, you're stealing money from my franchise, and you want some BS. You up in the hills talking about I'm on vacation, spring break, and my team looks is hot garbage. I'm not trying to hear it.
I mean, the triangle is supposed to work with this unit. They could have Porzingis, Carmelo, and Lopez sit on that triangle and have the guards sit on the outside, but it's not working. It's just not
working. Because you don't have a Hall of Famer, Ty. The triangle has only won championships when you had two Hall of Famers in the triangle. He won six with Chicago. You had Jordan and Pippen. He won, what, three or four or five in L.A. You had Shaq and Kobe. And then you had Kobe. Well, who's the Hall of Fame? Who's the no doubt Hall of Famer on the Knicks right now?
Carmelo.
There's some doubt about Carmelo's Hall of Fame candidacy. Let's all be honest about it.
Listen, if y'all name can make the damn Hall of Fame,
No. What I'm saying
is making the Hall of Fame. Okay.
Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think he'll make
so
the Hall
when
of Fame.
I say no. Yeah, when I say no doubt, I'm talking about first ballot. It ain't even a question, okay? There's going to be a lot of questions about damn Carmelo Anthony because the narrative that surrounds him, again, another story. Who else is that? Who's the other Hall of Famer? Oh, wait.
Hey, Chris Ash.
Chris
Ash. Chris
Ash. No, he's not the Hall of Famer.
Stop that. If they're putting y'all lazy punk ass in the damn Hall of Fame.
Well, hey, you're going to have to take Carmelo's body of work, too. He won a title with Syracuse, so that counts, too.
Are we really hanging on to 2003? Or are we really holding on for dear life for 2003?
Yes. We could really go to 2015, right, if we wanted to, because we are playing on Saturday.
I mean, this is just a mess, man. And I'm going to say this also about the triangle. All the coaches who have coached the triangle, none of them have a winning record, not even 500. They have never had a winning record. They have never even been 500. The triangle doesn't work. It only works when you have Jordan, Pippen, Shaq, Kobe. That's it.
Right.
The triangle doesn't work. So
that's
all
right. Brian Shaw.
Time for me to be the same man on Showtime at the Apollo and snatch this topic off the table.
We're done.
You was trying to start some trouble, so let's start it up. How y'all feel about Reggie Jackson celebrating?
You told me to leave it alone, and then you bring it up. This is
because you wanted to go there. Let's get at it.
Twin City, I'm going to tell you the conversation we had in the green room, right? He said, Ty, don't bring it up because I'm not in the mood for it.
What I said, I have been in a particular mood, and again, that was a green room conversation, and I'm not going to say everything on the air that I said in the green room.
That's
why it's the green room. I just basically was telling you the mood that I was in about Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and the comments that they were making about their once beloved teammate. And, you know, all of a sudden you got an issue with this guy because he wants to have a career of his own and get money like they're getting money and try to basically be a player who stands on his own 2 feet because he has the talent to do so. And now you mad. Hey, listen, he did what he was supposed to do as a point guard. He ran Russell into that screen. He came off of that mug, wide open lane. He elevated. He dunked. He stuck the landing, and he celebrated. Don't be mad. Russell make faces after every dunk. You know what I'm saying? Russell make a three-point shot, and he blowing on his fingers and putting his six-shooters away. Man, please, don't be a hypocrite. Take it. Like Diddy used to say, take that, take that.
Okay, I throw this one around the kitchen. I had it as a topic. I swear I did. I tried to chill for my big brother. Mikey D, your thoughts on the latest spat between a hot Thunder team resting players and the Pistons taking care of business regardless of that situation and this actually getting under the skin of both Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
It was tough for Durant and Westbrook. Shut your mouths. You got beat. I mean, Mr. October was throwing his hands in the air and showing you that he is the straw that stirs the drink in Detroit. I loved it. You know, Detroit hasn't had anything to get crazy about in a while. That was a big win for them, big for their fans. I was happy that Reggie Jackson, hey, he got traded from that team. You know, hey, that's what happens. You get beat, shut your mouth, go home.
Cue it up, Ty. Give that man a round of applause. You feel me? You know what I'm saying? Reggie got traded. Reggie got paid. He became a starter. He's about to help his team get into the Eastern Conference playoffs. You know what I'm saying? He's got a good coach. He's got teammates that love him. You think he worried about Kevin and Russell? But Kevin and Russell worried about Reggie? Come on, man. That's personal. That's a problem right there. Grow up, Kevin. Grow up, Russell.
play ball. I know I told y'all to sit down and rest. What you resting for? What you resting for? What you trying to say? Detroit sucks. You rested. You couldn't take care of business, and you mad. Hey, don't blame Reggie. Blame the coaching staff. Suckers.
Chandler, your thoughts on the situation?
I just heard about it, so I was trying to watch the video. They didn't show the dunk or whatever. They showed some of what he was doing. Look, who cares about Detroit? Who the hell cares about Oklahoma City? What do you mean, who cares about Detroit? A lot more people care about the damn Pistons than the Thunder. How dare they? And like what he said, all the nonsense that y'all doing when you're winning up until you choke games away, giving away fourth quarter leads, I'm sorry. You in no position to talk with anybody. Here's a thought. Hold the fourth quarter lead against the team, then come talk to me about Bush League.
Right.
I don't respect what Kevin Durant said about Detroit. I don't respect that, though. Or that, you know, who cares about Detroit? I know I'm a diehard Thunder fan, but don't punish the city of Detroit or look at the organization like that. I agree with Royce. You're over there resting, and you know ever since he's left, the Pistons have not beaten the Thunder. So this is the first time that he took care of business since leaving Oklahoma City and winning that game. And now, you know, you have a situation where Russell's actually addressing the media, seeming frustrated. I didn't even get to see the actual footage of what Kevin Durant was saying to the, you know, to the media. But, you know, reading
Todd, sorry to interrupt you, but Kevin Durant retracted his statement when he said, who cares about Detroit? What he really meant to say was, who cares about the Detroit Lions?
Man.
All right.
Y'all do funny, boy.
I think right there, I'll close on that note.
I got to ask y'all, man, why do y'all come to the kitchen to take shots and tie when we be in the middle of a topic, man? I don't get that. Cut that crap out, man. Damn. Come on, man. That's whack.
All right, fellas, I need a plug, close out, shout out if we shut it down here at the cafe. Great stuff, you know, height of debate. Yao Ming, I still don't think you're a Hall of Famer. Come see me if you feel some type of way. I'll back you down in the paint. I ain't worried about you. You 7-6-8 season in the league. You only played four full seasons, and they put you in a doggone Hall of Fame. Man, I feel like that's disrespect to dudes like Robert Parrish, the Chief, Will Chamberlain, David Robinson. These dudes put in work. George, Mike, and Will, Bill. I mean, I don't even look at it as y'all. Like, stop. You sold jerseys. That's all you did. I'm done, man. Let me get plugs and clothes out from all of you. Mikey D, I'll let you set it off first.
Ty, thanks for having me in the kitchen again, guys. Always nice to be in here. Big weekend for the Syracuse Orangemen. Going to take out North Carolina on Saturday. Enroll to the national championship game on Monday against Villanova. See ya.
We'll see if the Big East could be in the house for real. That'll be interesting. You already have them beating Buddy Hield. Come tomorrow. We'll talk about that game. Well, at least it's Villanova, Oklahoma. I think that's to get your popcorn ready game. That's to get your popcorn ready game. But I know this. If y'all let North Carolina get out to a run like y'all let Virginia do it, I don't know if y'all will be back in that game. I know that much. Royce, you already know what to do. Help me plug, shut it down, close out anything that you'd like to promote. You already know what to do at this time.
Man, Sports City Chef, Crossover Cafe, Master Chef Edition. We'll be back here next Thursday, chopping it up, doing what we do. Y'all quiet down. All that talk about who's going to win the national championship. If you don't say Buddy Hield, you're wrong, period. Hottest player in the country right now, in my opinion. I see you, Bryce Johnson. I see you, North Carolina. Your problem is your coach on the sideline. He says to choke it out. So, yeah, I'm rolling with the Sooners. I just think it's their turn. It's about that time. Kobe at the game. Kobe says Buddy Hield is great. Okay, I'm out. Buddy Hield, Sooners.
I know this. that's why I said come tomorrow. I have a controversial topic about Buddy Hield. I hope I don't bring my karma and my bad luck with me on him, but I'm bringing it to the kitchen. I will be bringing that to the kitchen tomorrow at the round table. Chandler, you already know what to do. I need a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut it down here at the cafe.
Well, since I'm now attending Villanova, I got to root for them. So go Villanova. Although I love Buddy Hield, that's my man. I think he should be number one draft pick. I'm sorry, but I got to root for Villanova. I'll be moving again. You know, I won't be around on Tuesday. I really may not be available a lot of this month because I'm going to be moving again. I got a job again. I'll be employed again, and I'll be moving back to New York. Only I'll be in New York State. So hopefully I can get around and be here, but, you know, my biggest thing, man, is my health and trying to stay employed. So now that I'm finally got the VA to give me some meds that may work, I'm going back to work. I will be in Rochester, New York by the end of the month. So I'll be calling y'all from there.
That's what's
no
up.
No doubt. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. Like I said, we'll be back here tomorrow, round table it up. I got a Buddy Hield topic. I got more to talk. It's not even really Buddy Hield I'm really talking about. It's the Sooners. It's Oklahoma. Now look at you, Oklahoma. I will expose everything that happened last year. Everybody forgot 365 days ago. They were sitting in a chair on a bus leaving a basketball game. I hope people remember what happened on that damn bus because they lost that damn fraternity. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, y'all on Buddy Hill Jock now. Now you know.
Welcome all you motherfuckers.